This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, the Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/stringchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/stringchicks. masterclass.com/stringchicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. And welcome to Shrink Chicks.
Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
We are so excited to be here. Dr. Kristen Mark, probably the world's most impressive resume we've ever had. Right?
We were going to do an intro, but then we were like, there's so much to say.
Well, your follow-up with Emily Nagowski, right? Who is our favorite sex researcher who we've had on before. So we couldn't possibly fit it all into one introduction. She is a behavioral health scientist, a professor, a therapist, a researcher, sex therapist, sex educator, and all the things. Welcome, Kristen. We're so happy to have you today.
Thanks for having me.
So the number one thing people want to know is, I feel like people love the idea of like what a sex researcher is, right? It's very interesting.
It's a great party.
But what do you actually do?
Yeah. So, right. Great question. And it is definitely a hit at cocktail parties. I would say, we really want to understand human sexual behavior. And so to do that, we use a variety of different methods to collect data from humans, which humans are imperfect, but our measures try to, make them be able to be a little bit more perfect in our analysis. We collect data. It might be like survey data, it might be interviews, it might be physiological data. We have a variety of different ways that we can measure things related to sex and sexual health. And I often collect data from couples, because to me, it's just so important to have both members of the couple's perspective on their sexual experience together. So often, I'm sure you both have experienced this, like two people in a relationship might have a totally different idea of what their sex life looks like.
Everything's great. This is horrible. I hate it.
Right.
Very different.
Yeah. So it's really important to collect data from then both members of the couple. And then we can do some really cool analytic techniques. Where we can like analyze the differences between the two or similarities as well, and just the way that those might fluctuate over time.
Well, it's so interesting, because everyone I think is obsessed with what's quote unquote normal, right? Like the number one thing you hear all the time.
How many times should I be having sex?
How often do you hear that question?
A week, all the time. I think also in my friend group too, yes. Everyone's talking about it. Everyone wants to like compare, make sure that they're on this, I'm having sex the right amount of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone, that is definitely the most common question. Like, am I normal? And the other most common question I get is like, how do I maintain desire in my long-term relationship? That's like the other main one. But maybe we'll get into that in a little bit. But so
now we have to do, Pandora's box there, my friend. So your job is insanely interesting, and there is so many different avenues, and I feel like a very complex thing. So I think another thing people really want is like, what is sex therapy?
Yeah. So sex therapy, some people make an assumption that like, if you go to sex therapy, you're going to have to like have sex in a therapist's office, or like, they make these assumptions about there being some sort of like nakedness happening. And like, I like to talk about that in terms of like, you do not have to literally get naked, but we will definitely strip down like vulnerabilities that might make you feel really exposed in the context of sex therapy, because nobody's, you know, we're not in our society trained to talk about sex. Like we just, it's not normal. It's not considered, or it's not considered normal. It should be. And we just have so much shame wrapped up in sex, so many barriers to talking about sex. And so it's really important that couples find a space, a safer space to talk about that and to have those conversations, especially if, you know, having a neutral party sort of talk about it with you can be really, really powerful for getting to the bottom of some of these issues.
And that was going to be my question is like, how do you create kind of like a comfortable environment for these couples so that they feel like they can talk to you?
Yeah, well, as with all therapy, therapeutic alliance is just like so important. So building trust between couples will often come in and expect you to take someone's side. And that's true with regular couples therapy. It's also true with sex therapy. You know, infidelity issues in particular, that can become an issue, but you just really have to be the neutral party and build up the trust to also let the couple know, like, I'm here to help you reach your goals. So you define what those are. And once we get those settled, then you'll see that like, it's actually beneficial for you two to be on the same team. Mm-hmm. And that's true for sex issues. So often, like, especially if someone's dealing with a lot of sexual rejection over time, this wall builds up between them. And so it's the therapist's job to kind of break down that wall and find holes in the wall for them to sort of see each other the same way that they used to. So a lot of the principles of sex therapy are really similar to the principles of couples therapy. Mm-hmm. It's just that the topic area is more sensitive and can be really hard for some people to talk about.
And it's funny, right? So Jen and I both have specializations in sex therapy that we are trained in. And still, we were like, no, we need more of an expert to come on. Like, because it is a very complex, nuanced way of speaking about this. You know, that it takes... I think a lot of people, especially couples therapists, if you look at most couples therapist training, there's like one intro to human sexuality class. That's it. Right. And think about how much our sex life can affect so many parts of us. And also the the horrible thing to talk about, like the amount of people that have experienced sexual violence in their life, right? That really can affect things. So we have this situation where it becomes a quality of life thing. And we also have a lot of people that aren't training. And it's sort of a big training, right? Because you have to learn how to talk to people and how to not react. And then we have this whole thing of SARS and learning to expose yourself in that way. So you've made your whole career about this.
Yeah. And so I think the other piece too is like, we don't get sex ed growing up.
No.
Like so many people don't get any sex ed. And well,
you're Canadian though.
I am Canadian. We didn't get it either.
Wait, so I do have to ask you, do you notice in a difference of how we talk and think about sex between Canada and the States?
I do. Yeah, a little bit. Like the religion influence is less in Canada, I would say. And there's quite a bit of a religion influence in the US around like shame around sexuality. Mm-hmm. So that part is different. However, I will say like, definitely we still don't have comprehensive sex ed that's regulated across provinces in Canada. In the US, it's even more broken apart because like from one county to another, it's different from one school to another. Like I just moved to Minnesota from Kentucky, and in Kentucky, like one school on one corner could be like less than a mile from another school, and they're getting vastly different information about sex. So like two kids could live next door to each other and be getting totally different information.
Oh my gosh.
And there's no like state level or even county level ways to regulate this, which is really problematic. Whereas you look at somewhere like the Netherlands, where I've taken students for many years in a row to learn about their sex ed practices. And they do comprehensive sex ed from preschool onward every year, mandated by the federal level. So it's a smaller country, but we can at least do that on like different state levels, right?
Yes.
And so it's just, so not only are people who are training in sex therapy having to get like the therapeutic components of, you know, learning how to do sensate focus, learning what the Plissett model is, like all of these pieces that are really necessary for just therapeutic practice. Then you also have to get the content of like sexual response cycles, like responsive desire and spontaneous desire and how it's circular. And there's lots of motivations for sex. And there's all of these different pieces at play that you never learn that we should be learning in high school.
Do you, because I know you said in the Netherlands, there's so obviously so much more education around it.
So much more than nothing.
Right. So much more than nothing. And do you see like how that changes like socially, you know, whether it's in couples or in, you know, like how, what the difference is over time, like how
the quality of sex life.
Yeah.
So one of the main differences is just comfort in talking about sex. And so the Dutch are very pragmatic, and that pragmatism comes out in the context of like, you know, you see it in their drug laws too. So you see it in the fact that they just, this is going to happen, so let's just talk about it. Yeah. Teens are going to sexually explore, so let's just talk about it. And so they also use accurate terminology for genitals and that kind of thing, which is really important for things like preventing sexual assault, having people feel like they have sexual autonomy.
Not teaching girls it's a hoo-ha.
No.
I have literally at my daughter's gymnastics class heard moms
say hoo-ha.
Say, do you have to go wee wee? Do you like, it's, yeah.
I was just talking to Nikki, actually, this is an aside, I'm sorry, about like words that make me cringe. And like wee wee is also one of them.
Yeah, it's horrible. But I think it happens more than not, especially we're teaching young kids.
And also if their parents are uncomfortable with that terminology, yes, because they were never taught that they can't, you know, they're uncomfortable talking to their kids about it.
Yeah, completely. Yeah. People are just, we aren't used to using the correct terminology. We presented to a school board in Kentucky to try and push back against these laws and, or push back against these policies. They weren't laws, but, and in talking to the head of the school board, she like told us we needed to stop talking about these things. And we were just using, medically accurate terminology.
He could not handle the word vagina.
Could not handle the word vulva. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, and I think and most penis. People don't know the difference between a vagina
vulva and
a
vulva. Vagina. Right.
Yeah. Right. Like, so like this is, we're sitting here talking about what is one medical, what is one science, which is the actual terminology. And you can see people's bodies physically cringe when you say this word. Right. Totally. So say like this part of myself and like, why can't I sit here and say this word? And I think that unfortunately, specifically in the US, is huge.
Yeah. So I'm the director of education at University of Minnesota Medical School, and our medical students get a lot more sex ed than most medical students, which is amazing and so great because so many people first turn to their MD when they have a sexual problem, and most MDs get maybe like 2 hours training.
Yeah.
Well, we give them 20, which is amazing. Yeah, and so, but tomorrow is our first class this semester. And like, I have a whole set of us practicing saying accurate terminology, a whole set of slides, because most people have never said the word penis just in like a medical setting, or have said the word vulva, maybe ever. Yeah. Because they might not know what it is. And so it's really, really important. A lot of like university level education around sex ed is either remedial for high school education that went bad, or just like brand new information.
Wow. Well, and I can't believe how many times I've had clients come in that they're coming in for a lot of times, and they do a lot of postpartum work for sexual pain after birth, right? And their OB will say to them, well, just have a glass of wine before.
Oh, well,
if you just have a few glasses of wine, it's not going to hurt.
Oh.
Well, wait a second. Right? But you're right. Like, it's just truly a lack of information, you know, to have all of these years and it's just not properly given. So how amazing that you get this opportunity, Kristen, do that. How cool.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's so great.
I have to tell everyone a story.
I know what you're going to tell. Don't.
So I bought the faux Sherpa Duetit scrunchie.
I don't give a sheep.
I love that name. And it's so cute. And Emily, asked me to bring it back for her. And so we would like switch off every week. And I said, it's like Sisterhood of the Traveling Scrunchie.
Okay, wait. It's because I've been like really into monochrome outfits, but with texture differences. And like I wore a uniform in high school. Like I need to wear the same thing over and over.
Honestly, it looks really cute on you.
Well, it's perfect. It's soft. It feels amazing. And it just holds your hair up so well.
It really does. So say goodbye to bad hair days with Dew. Spice up your daily wardrobe with a fun scrunchier hair accessory. Use one-time code SHRINKCHICKS for 15% off your first purchase with them at DewEdit.com. And please do yourself a favor and subscribe to their newsletter. All newsletter subscribers get early access and front-of-the-line priority with exclusive access to shop all of their drops first. Do it.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14-karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks.
Wow. Okay. So I know we've been a million things to talk about, but let's talk a little bit about some of like our biggest questions that come in. And since you opened up Pandora's box earlier, right, of your other number one question, let's go back to that. How do you keep the spark, the flame, right? All the stuff. That's what everyone always wants to know.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you keep the spark alive? So it's really individual desire is so complex, right? It's influenced by like individual things like stress and being tired and like how attractive you feel that day. Like so many different individual level factors go into an individual's desire. And then there's all these like dyadic factors. So things like, are you pissed off at your partner today? Are you like, how are you getting along in general? How compatible do you feel with your partner? How are you communicating and are you communicating about sex and just generally? And then there's also these like societal factors that play that are at play. So like our gendered expectations around desire and wanting sex and being gatekeepers of sex versus being pursuers, and all of these pieces also play in. So when you think about all of those factors that play into sexual desire, first of all, inevitably, the two of you are maybe not going to be totally in sync all the time. So there's going to be inevitable instances of sexual desire discrepancy where one of you has higher or lower desire. But to keep that, so that's going to be inevitable. So expectation setting is the first thing. Like, set your expectations where you know that in the context of a long-term relationship, there just will be times when you're not going to be in sync, and that's okay. Just don't let it become this elephant in the room that you don't talk about. Instead, like, talk about what it is that might be influencing your desire at that time. Like, hey, work is like really stressful right now. And I feel like as soon as I come home, I have all this work to do at home and it's just too much. And I don't want to have sex with you because I'm kind of mad actually that you're not having to do all of this. And like, that's okay. And to have a partner that you can say that to and for them to be like, oh yeah, that does suck. Like, just have some empathy for your partner and understand that this is temporary and you can work toward getting things back on track. Another thing I think that's really important is like maintaining a level of autonomy within the relationship. So, so many couples, I think you all are probably similar age to me, and we like, you know, Spice Girls, that song, Two Become One, remember that song? So, you know, that song is like a killer of desire. Like, no, two don't become one. That's not math. Like, math will stay the same. One plus one is always two. So let's keep it that way. Like, that is absolutely important. And so keeping some level of autonomy, and we've seen, like, I've collected a bunch of data over COVID, and we've seen that sexual desire and sexual frequency have both decreased over the course of the pandemic. And one of those reasons is because the ability to maintain any level of autonomy within the context of working from home, living from home, having to stay in your home is very difficult.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah,
understandable that people don't want to have sex, or that they aren't making time for it or able to make time for it.
Right. It makes me think about, you know, because I think, you know, and I know we're going to get into this a little bit, but there's an idea that when couples move in together, oh, like, we're going to have so much time. We're going to have so much more sex.
Doesn't happen.
Does not happen. Nice. Actually, the opposite happens, right? And so it makes, and I think that that's another thing with COVID is that there's this expectation of like, we have so much more time. We're going to be having so much sex.
No,
definitely not. Yeah. Yeah. That monotony of the day-to-day life can really be a damper to desire.
Well, and you brought up something I think is really important. I'm wondering if we could go to a little bit, is male versus female, right? Because we have this myth, right? We have this myth, men always want sex, women never do, right? That they always have to be, you know, coercing them into sex or something.
The men are the pursuer.
Yes, right? Women are always distancing sexually. And really, that's a gendered idea. And it's really not totally accurate.
Yeah, and pretty influenced by those societal expectations, right? Yeah. If kids grow up thinking like, as women, we need to be gatekeepers of sex, then it's really hard to like embrace having higher sexual desire.
Yeah.
And for men, that also does a disservice to men and to non-binary folks. Like, the whole situation around like just men feeling this guilt or this pressure to always be ready and willing to engage in sex, like, men experience stress too, and they also experience fatigue. And like, there are lots of reasons why someone might not always be ready for sex. So that's definitely, our data don't show that, especially when they don't show that gender difference, especially when we look at it on a day-to-day level. Mm-hmm. We do see that when you look at desire more broadly, like as if it's a trait, like introversion or extroversion, when you look at desire in that way, then yes, we do tend to see that men have higher desire than women. But I would argue that that is only our societal influence, that is actually not genuinely true, but just what women and men are feeling like they are expected to say in the context.
Really, like what they're reporting.
Yeah, right. Totally. Well, and it's not the biological predisposition, right? Like, exactly. It's because of this
socially constructed.
Exactly, yeah. The social constructed. So would you say, are there any differences between men and women? From Mars and Venus, that's what we need to know.
Right, yeah, ignore that book. Never read it. No, so I have my whole career have found across the board, there are far more gender similarities than there are differences. simply because when you look at individual women and you look at individual men, there are more differences between different women than there are between women as a whole and men as a whole. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of human variation, period. Like, you know, normal is a wide spectrum when it comes to sexuality. And we really do see that, yeah, when you're looking for gender differences, you're going to find them. But when you're looking for gender similarities, you're also going to find them.
And confirmation bias.
Yeah. Right. Yes, exactly. And so you're going to be able to, once you like parse the data in certain, you know, we could look at sexual identity differences, which we do. Sometimes we see more identity differences than we do gender differences, especially once we start looking at like the bisexual population. Yeah. Like there's a lot of gender similarity there. And so I am someone who fully supports the gender similarity hypothesis around like there's just far more similarity than difference. And any of those large widespread differences tend to be socially constructed.
Well, it's funny because you can also start to see it so much when you look at same-sex couples, right? If we're talking about two people of the same sex, and this should also go into it, but no, you right. see pleasure. I think, you know, we know research supports that pleasure is very different in same-sex couples than it is with heterosexual couples.
Right. Yeah. We did a really interesting study where we looked at, we compared like different, we were looking at women's sexual desire and we looked at bisexual, lesbian, and straight women. And what we found is across the board, like this idea of lesbian bed death, where like same-sex female couples just like no longer have sex. That was actually just a couple issue, not a lesbian issue. Like that was not unique to lesbians. Like sexual desire and sexual frequency tend to decrease over the course of time in a relationship, period, across the board. Mm-hmm. It's just that within the context of the lesbian community, there is this like name that's been placed to it. And so they have this sort of like, they've got it named and they call it out. And actually that might be helpful for them battling yeah. all this stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think like another thing you mentioned is just like the rejection piece that plays into a couple's sexual relationship, right? Like if someone mm-hmm. has a higher sexual desire than the other person and they're not communicating about it, how do you kind of help a couple work through that? Because they get very much stuck in this pattern of one person is pursuing the other one, maybe shutting down or saying, oh, I have a headache, or like that the communication around it is really broken down. How do you help them work through those pieces?
Yeah, a lot of that comes to building up an understanding and empathy between each other around like, so for instance, if a couple is having trouble communicating about that rejection piece in particular, we know that that rejection piece is associated with an underlying fear. And what is that fear? So getting at that emotion behind that and having both members of the couple identify each other's emotions around like, what does that rejection bring up for you? Because a lot of the time, like it's actually something you can become quite empathetic toward your partner for. If you know that when your partner's rejecting your advances, it actually makes you feel like they don't want to be with you and they might abandon you, for instance. So getting to that the bottom of that and getting to the underlying emotions of it is really important. And those conversations can be really hard to have, right? So like, for example, I'm the scientific consultant for this app called Coral. And
it's amazing. I've used it with clients. We're obsessed. Oh my God. We're putting it on Instagram so everyone knows. Tell us more.
Yeah. And so what's so great about Coral is that it allows for the couple to facilitates the discussion, the beginning of that discussion. Because as we talked about earlier, people don't know how to talk about sex. We aren't given the tools to know how to bring sex up and know how to bring it up in a way that isn't going to result in our partner getting their back up or feeling like you're criticizing them. And so one of the great tools that Coral has is like the ability to talk to your partner. They have this like partner feature. And the research shows that like sexual communication is so important. If anyone were to ever like, I get asked all the time, like, what's the one thing that you need to always do? And I'm like, communication. And journalists will be like, oh, that's so stale. Like, that's such an old suggestion. And I'm like, yeah, it's stale because no one is doing it still. Like, when people start communicating, I will stop giving that as my answer.
Absolutely. It is so true. And you know what's so funny? I watch Shark Tank often. Just as once again, yes. Aside, I promise I'm going somewhere. And there was this, someone created something where it was like, if one of the partners wanted sex, they pressed a button. And if the other partner wanted sex, they pressed a button, and then they would both get like something on their phone or something, a signal that they'd be like, okay, now we're both into sex, let's go for it. If one partner pressed the button, the other one didn't, the other one wouldn't get notified that the other partner wanted to have sex.
So that's like, good.
It was very interesting, but then
how do you know if your partner, I don't know, one, it seems expensive for something you could do with your mouth, but.
That was my point, is that like, it's almost saying, don't communicate about this, just press this button.
Yeah.
So that you can kind of avoid rejection.
Well, it's interesting, right? Because like when I've worked with some couples where they're like really, really at the beginning stages of trying to communicate about sex, right? There are some people that grew up with so much purity culture, so much sexual shame that they don't have the language. But that seems maybe like putting a Band-Aid over a bullet hole.
That's how I feel.
Did it get bumped?
I don't think so.
Now we have to find out.
That's good.
I mean, Kristen, what do you think? Would you recommend?
No, I think that is totally a crutch that then you begin to rely on. Yeah, and 100%. I don't think that that's healthy.
Mm-mm. Because it's saying, oh, you don't have to communicate about this at all.
Another reason I think that that's not very healthy is because, you know, so often actually it can be healthy for your relationship to meet your partner's sexual needs. And so when you are meeting your partner's sexual needs for like what we call approach goals, then where you are wanting to feel closer to your partner, you want to feel like you're meeting their sexual needs because you love them and like you want to make them happy, those yeah. sort of approach goals. When you engage in sex, even if you don't feel like it, and the goals are approach goals, that actually is really beneficial for your relationship.
Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blue Land. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blue Land products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blue Land proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blue Land is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packed. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blue Land has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
However, if you're engaging in sex when you don't feel like it for what we call avoidance goals, which are things like, I want to avoid a fight, or like, I guess I should say yes because it's my duty. Mm-hmm. In those ways, if those are your goals, those avoidance goals, then that's actually not healthy for your relationship, and it's not good for your relationship going forward. So these couples who have what's called like higher sexual communal strength, which is something that my friend and colleague Amy Muse has done a lot of work in, of this sexual communal strength. If you're higher in that, where you, and people who are high in sexual communal strength are motivated to meet their partner's sexual needs, then those people tend to just maintain desire longer over time and also be more satisfied in their relationships.
I love what you just said about the approach goals, because I think that it's very much kind of ingrained too in the way we talk about sex. Like if one partner has a lower desire and they're like, okay, I'm just going to like check this off my list so that, that, you know, my partner isn't bothering me about it, or I can push it off a little more. I'm like avoiding a fight in some way. I think that's the way that we talk about it a lot of the time, but it is to say, like, it is okay to say, like, I want to feel close to my partner. I want them to be happy. This is something I want to give to them. Even if I don't have the desire in these moments, that it's a way to frame it.
Well, and don't you know that's why people want to know that average? Like, so they can say to themselves, like, all right, well, I had sex once a week and I checked it off my list. So now that I'm average or something, right? Like, it is this check-off.
They can, like, prove that there's-
I did it.
And another reason why that's a really good approach is approach goals using being a good approach is because, I didn't mean to do that. Is because you know, desire isn't always this feeling that comes before arousal, right? Like desire doesn't always, and actually often doesn't come before arousal. And so sometimes you won't feel like having sex until you're kind of like halfway into it. And then you'll be like, oh yeah, this like does feel good. Like I should do this more often. And across the board, that is what couples tend to say who do engage in sex when they don't feel like it, with the caveat of being in a healthy relationship and no like coercion or anything happening. But like, you know, in that context, most people, I would say like I would bet that 99.5% of them do not regret engaging in that sexual act later, right?
Yeah.
Sex does elicit feel good emotions. It does bring you closer to your partner. It does have very like healthy benefits.
Well, if you lean into it, right? I feel like as opposed to people that go in with this full resistance and they're sitting there like, is, you know, I mean,
when's it going to be over?
This is a gender thing, but like, is he done? Is she done? Is this over yet? Right? Like, as opposed to like, how can I also experience some pleasure? How can I also experience some connection? What is this about for our relationship?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And I think that piece of the fact that like there's almost this societal idea that we're supposed to have this spontaneous desire, right? That, and if we don't, right, we see it in the movies, right? Like all of a sudden, you know, two people are so into it. They have sex. They both orgasm at the same time.
That's my favorite.
And then it's done. And it's like this passionate, amazing experience. And I think it really puts this idea in our head of, oh, okay, in order to be into this, I have to have this spontaneous desire. And so I love what you said about, you know, sometimes we get into it once we start going.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yep. Wow. Yep. Arousal can come before desire and does often, especially in these long-term relationships. You're not going to be doing laundry and suddenly start banging on the, like on the washing machine, the way you see in movies, right? Like that just doesn't happen.
Movies. Once again, I say this in a lot of podcasts, but I think we need to make more realistic movies.
The thing is, they might be kind of boring.
Boring, right? Like people they would fights and then communicate.
You know what?
Or maybe going to work for 8 hours.
Right.
You know what though? I've been watching the new season of Shrill came out, and that is a great example of a show that actually portrays sex like pretty accurately.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Wait, I love Shrill.
Yeah, new season out.
Okay.
I'm gonna start watching.
I'm actually, that's so funny you said that, because I went back to rewatch season two because I had sort of fallen off a little bit, but I just really love Adi Bryant.
She's amazing.
Great.
Right. Okay. So we have to, one, we're in love with you. Two, we have to go back to, we're going to do a segment, right? A new segment with our guests of calling bullshit in your field. Let's dispel a myth in your field.
Or multiple myths.
Or myths. I know that you have a million. So Dr. Kristen, what are we calling bullshit on today?
We already did my one that I had in my head about men's and women's desire, but it's okay. We've got so many. So I would like to, I think we should, you know, call bullshit on masturbation in the context of relationships. So people will make a ton of assumptions around like when you're in a relationship, you should no longer be masturbating. Like you should be getting all of your sexual needs met. in the context of your relationship. And that is completely bullshit. First of all, it's really great way to meet your partner in the middle. If you're experiencing desire discrepancy, to masturbate instead. It's amazing for postpartum to masturbate instead, to mutually masturbate. Like, doesn't have to be this penetration situation always happening. And I think that that's a really important thing. Now I will say, like, if we're looking like more field wise, I can expand upon the desire thing, where I think there are some people in my field who definitely do believe that there are inherent sex differences when it comes to sexual desire. And those are the folks who like only really look at the hormonal response, like, and see testosterone as the drive hormone and like estrogen as the like not drive. And so, and I would just argue there's just too much societal influence there to ignore. You just can't, not with something like desire. You know, you see these like desire drugs being released for women, for example. It just doesn't make any sense, actually. And there have been campaigns to say we have like all of these drugs for men's desire, but no, none of those drugs target men's desire. They target men's arousal. They target the erection response. Mm-hmm. So you want to make a drug for women's arousal, then fine, go ahead and do that and make a drug that might improve lubrication or maybe like engorges the clitoris. But all of those things have been tried and none of them help women's sexual functioning or their experience of pleasure and satisfaction. So I think this idea that desire is this like sex separate thing, and it just isn't. You might be talking about arousal, but don't conflate the two because they are definitely different.
So I'm thinking something that I feel like we hear a lot, which maybe would be a perfect thing to end to give people as a takeaway here today, which is a lot of our listeners are women, right? So I'll talk about it from a female point of view. We have maybe three male listeners. And one of them is sitting over here, our editor. That is my husband. Okay. So, but I feel like the number thing I hear a lot of women say is I felt like I was a sexual person in my teen years. I felt like I experienced a lot of sexual shame when I started my sexual experience. I want to become more of a sexual person now in my long-term relationship, in my marriage. What are some tips of really starting to explore my sexuality and really sort of magnify my sexuality as a woman?
Yeah, I think women really struggle with this too, because in our adolescence, like adolescent female sexuality is stop, no, we aren't going to talk about it. Like, it doesn't exist. That's it. And
but internally, it's off the damn charts.
Right. And so that is doing such a disservice. It's doing such a disservice. It's so terrible. So I think starting at like, have you looked at your genitals? You know, like, have you even looked at them? Like, look at them. There's an amazing resource called the Vulva Library, I think. And it's like pictures of all of these vulvas. Like, look at your genitals, look at those, like, and see like, whoa, there's such variation that happens within vulvas. And so getting to know your body is the first thing. If you haven't masturbated to orgasm, try and do that. And the way that you might get over like some of the fear, like a lot of people say to me, you know, like, I just feel weird touching myself. It feels weird. So try and do everything you can. What are the things that relax you? Do all of those things. Is that going into the bathtub and like having candles and like, I don't know, that's a very feminine thing, I guess, but that's what relaxes me. So, you know, have a glass of wine, like do something that makes you feel good and then embark upon it. So setting the stage for that. And then additionally, learn how to talk about what you might want. Like, especially if you're in a really comfortable, like happy long-term relationship, or relatively, you know, they're not all perfect, but you know, say to your partner, I really want to try and get to know my sexuality a little bit better. Are you game for this? Like, can you go along this with me? Like, it might mean us stopping while we're having sex and me being like, hey, can you like shift here? Or can you try this? Or like, in what ways can we try and make this feel better for me? Mm-hmm. And that part I think can be hard to articulate, because so much of our like everything is around pleasing our partners,
yeah,
not only sexually, but like in life. We are always, women in general, like are always, and again, I think that men would, if they were socialized this way, like socialized to like just please everyone. We're such, you know, we want to make everyone else happy. In fact, our sexual satisfaction research, this is really interesting. Our sexual satisfaction research shows that when women answer questions about sexual satisfaction and they're in relationships with men, they actually use their partner's satisfaction as a marker for their own. Whereas men answer those questions based on their own satisfaction.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating. Yeah. It's the same thing for same-sex women, female couples. They answer the question based on their female partner. And so that in and of itself, like the fact that we're using our partner's satisfaction as a marker of our own. So getting to know and finding ways to like prioritize your pleasure, finding like ways to talk about it more during sex and outside of sex, I think those things will go a really long way for getting to know your own body sexually. And then, you know, women also tend to be more likely to have like these external factors that influence them during sex. And the thing that I think is the most promising treatment for this is mindfulness exercises. Mm-hmm. Lori Brado's work in like mindfulness and sexual desire has been brilliant. And she's been doing a lot of great studies that actually have been shown to work in men too. She's starting to look at that in men. And that is really incredible, an incredibly powerful tool that is free that you can do at any given time. And actually that app I mentioned, Coral, they have tons of great mindfulness exercises in there too. That are specific to one's sex life. So trying to find ways to practice that can help you get more in touch with your own sexual pleasure.
Well, I love the idea of an app, right? You know, there's something when we're first like exploring this and thinking about it, we want it to feel safe. We want it to feel secure, yes. Right?
Like it's easier to do when you're like on an app, on technology.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? I have recommended, I remember one time, Ian Kerner's She Comes First, I had recommended to a client and he was like, I can't buy this book. I can't have right, this book. Like he had a fear of having the book in the house right. With his partner there. Right. And so
to like secretly read it.
Secretly read. Well, if there's such
communicating about it. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. As opposed to God, look at this beautiful book I'm reading for you, for us to experience more pleasure. I don't know. I think I would really like to come home.
I'd be like, cool. Good job.
To see that book on my table.
I'm going to order it for
your husband,
my husband.
And I think the other thing that's really important is framing this to your partner. Like, hey, I feel like this will really enrich our relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, like sometimes people can think like, what, you're just like really horny now suddenly or something, you know, and someone might get really defensive about that.
Yeah.
And to say like, no, it's not that. I just like really want to improve our, like we've been together for this long now. Like, is this it? Like, let's improve our relationship yeah. in general. And like, this is one facet of that. Mm-hmm. Blame it on hearing this podcast. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Blame it on you heard this thing. I often will tell people like, if they want to try a new sexual behavior with their partner, I'm like, tell them that you had a dream about doing that thing. You know, a little white lie isn't going to be the worst thing if it's to improve your relationship in my
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah, right.
Like say you had a dream about it last night. See what their reaction is. If their reaction is like, oh, that sounds awful, then you know, probably yeah. not going to be on the table. But if their reaction is like, oh, what was it like? You can kind of explore that and be like, we should maybe try it sometime.
That's awesome.
Like, it's a way to like softly approach, because that approach piece and initially bringing it up is the hardest part.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh.
So before we end, I have a final question, because I know we never touched on it. What is the average amount that people have?
So this number is hard because it changes over one's lifespan, right? But I will say that some really interesting research has shown that in terms of the happiness peak, so try and engage in sex a minimum of one time a week, because if you engage in sex less than once a week, then your happiness does tend to decline. Mm-hmm. So great. If you could reach the once a week, happiness doesn't necessarily increase after once a week. However, I think that, you know, depending on where you're at with that and also getting to know what each other like want out of sex. And if that is like connection, then maybe you need to increase the number of times per week. Averages, I know everyone wants to know an average,
but
it is around once a week. It's just hard because in different age groups, it's different. And then also define sex, right? So If you're defining sex in terms of like sexual activity, then it goes up. If you're defining sex in terms of just like very heterocentric vaginal penile penetration, then it goes down. So increase variety and make sure it's a minimum of once a week of that sexual connection time.
There you go.
Thank you for answering, because I know that
I won't answer when my couples bring it up. I know.
But that's a good way to talk about it
in terms of like the happiness part of it, right? Yeah. Now I'm going to steal that from you.
Because it's research. Please
do. Okay.
That's also great, is that it's research.
Dr. Kristen Mark, I want to sit here. First of all, okay, Director of Education, the Program of Human and Sexuality, Center for Study, Department of Family Medicine, Community Health, and University of Minnesota Medical Center, an affiliate research faculty at the Kinsey Institute in Indiana. She's a couples and sex therapist. Her research has been widely published in several academic journals, such as the Journal of Sex Research and Archives of Sexual Behavior. And our new best friend, Dr. Kristen Mark, thank you for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was a blast to have you. If you got something out of this episode, if you enjoyed yourself here today, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe. We'll talk to you all soon. Take care.
Have a good one.